Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at your taxes, tax returns on the show today. We're at zeroing in a little to start the show on income tax extension deadlines. Mary Mellum of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals, our guest, been with us many times. She and her husband, David, operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals, and it's great to have her back to be with us again to talk about your taxes. And I hope you'll join in with your questions. And the number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Mary Mellum, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Thanks, Larry. It's nice to talk to you at this unusual time of the year.
Yeah. Oh, man, extension deadlines. But, you know, before we start talking about the deadlines, why would somebody want to file an extension in the first place?
People in Wisconsin file extensions for one reason, because they're not here on April 15th if there are snowbirds who go south. So sometimes that's the reason that they file an extension, because they're not physically in Wisconsin at that point. Other reasons are they're not ready. Some reasons are because it helps spread out the business for tax professionals, because sometimes your tax professional can't get everything done. So there are a variety of reasons, and it's just a good idea, if you're not ready on April 15th, to file that extension, because in the end it saves you money if you owe money.
And is it difficult? What do they have to do to file?
An extension is a form 4810. No, that's not the right number. There is an extension form that they file, that they fill out, and I'm just drew a blank at the number. It starts with 48. I was going to say 2848, and that is the power of attorney form. But the extension form is just sending in this extension form, and you're kind of guessing whether you owe money or not, and you put down your guess of what you owe on this little form. You either mail it to the IRS or you do it electronically.
Okay.
So either way works.
So now, what are the extension dates?
The personal extension, the 1040 extension, is due October 15th. But there are two other extensions that come before that, and we'll just remind people of those. If you have an S corporation or if you have a partnership, that extension for those two is September 15th. And okay. Then there is one other weird little form, and that would be either a trust or an estate. That the trust is a calendar year, the estate can be a calendar year. And if you happen to have that on extension, that one happens to be due September 30th. So we've got kind of three dates. So, that we pay attention to.
So what happens if you're still not ready to file your taxes and here's the deadline?
Then get your checkbook out, because if you do not file on time, and if you did file an extension and you did not and cannot file on time, then your extension is null and void. And the assessment of failure to file, failure to pay, and interest starts back at April 15th.
Ouch. Ouch. You know what? Jim in Fond du Lac has something that may relate to this. Let's go there. Jim, hi.
Good morning, Mary and Larry. I filed paper returns for state and federal in early February. and received my state return shortly thereafter. Have not received my federal return. I've called the 800 number a few times, but I heard there is a backlog on paper returns, and I called the 800 number a few minutes before the show started with the information, and they don't seem to have a record of my return. Can you tell me what steps I can take from here, please?
So the IRS doesn't have your – they say they don't have your return.
According to the recording that I got after I entered the information they asked for, but it wasn't a person.
Okay.
First and foremost, the IRS is behind. They are behind on paper returns, and there were like 9 million paper returns that they had not opened yet. And that number goes down. Each week, the IRS comes out with an update that says, here we are. The best thing that you can have is patience. If you mailed your return to them, if you had a record of mailing it, that would be even better. But chances are it's sitting somewhere, either waiting to be on a, waiting to be opened or waiting to be worked on. Theoretically, they have said that they have all the electronic filing, electronic filed returns are up to date. It's just the paper ones that are not not yet done.
So just hang in there for a while, the way it sounds.
Well, you do. We've had one in our office that they finally got to a year later. And the saving grace is that if you have a refund coming, the refund will earn interest at a rate better than what the bank pays. That's about the only saving grace I can give to you. If you owe money, they have a date on that return that it's stamped when they receive it, even if it's not opened, and the interest would be calculated from the time they receive it, or up to the time they receive it. And that should be something, you know, to work with. The fact that they didn't open it, if you owe money and put the check in the envelope or whatever, that should not count against you with them not opening it.
Jim, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. You know, Mary, I saw a piece on, I think it was the Washington Post, sent a piece, had a piece on the amount of money that's going to be going into the IRS to help the IRS. But they had a photo of the cafeteria at the main IRS office. I don't know if it was in Washington or wherever it was. It was a big cafeteria, and no one could eat in the cafeteria because it was completely filled with files.
I'm not shocked at that at all. We had heard during the tax season that there were trailer loads of mail that were sitting at the IRS centers that hadn't been, had not been opened yet or logged in even.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Well, and the staffing was very short.
According to the IRS commissioner, there are 53% of the IRS staff that still hasn't returned to the office. They're working from home. So, you know, they aren't, all the people aren't there readily available like it would be pre-COVID. And so everything is behind, whether it's responding to email or responding to notices that the IRS has sent you, whether it's processing returns, whether it's getting at the ID theft issues, all of it, it's all behind. Just a little statistics. According to the IRS, as of August 12th, they had 9.3 million unprocessed individual returns for the tax year 2021.
Boy. Oh, well.
It's going to be a while. I mean, the only thing you can do is be patient. And calling the IRS, you're going to have a difficult time getting to talk to anyone. And even if you can, they don't have any more information usually than they put out through the website.
Let's take some more calls. By the way, you can join in. We have open lines, get you on pretty quickly as we talk your taxes with Mary Mellum. A number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. Joe in Delavan, we'll go to you now. Hi, Joe. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I have a quick question. I have recently retired, and I was asked by my financial advisor what sort of tax rate do I want on my deductions or my withdrawals from my IRA. And what I told them was I'm anticipating taking out roughly $7,000 pre-tax per month, with, so let's just say $80,000 a year, and then my wife makes about $50,000 to $60,000 per year. My question is, am I taking out enough or too much in relation to our overall income of, let's just say, roughly $140,000 a year?
Okay. I'm concerned about what you say pre-tax money. Is the money that you're taking out what was pre-tax when you earned it? Is that what you're saying?
No.
Okay. So explain to me what you mean by the pre-tax.
Oh, we lost him. I think what he meant was this was just money straight out of that pot that had no tax.
Okay. If it's a fully taxable pension, then the $140,000 roughly per year is going to fall in probably the 22% tax bracket for him. By the time he takes his $140,000 and takes off the standard deduction, he's still in the 22% marginal tax bracket. So anything more than probably 20% would be more than he needed. But again, depends on how his wife is withholding. If he takes nothing out in withholding and she doesn't over withhold, they're going to be short at the end of the year. So just depending on the situation, it would end up in the 22% marginal tax bracket for their income level.
All right, let's take another call. Mike in Verona, we'll go to you.
Hi. Yes, the question I had was with regard to the sale of a home. And if the home is sold at a loss, can the lost value between the purchase price and the sale price, can that be tax deductible? Is that defer any tax in this year or next year, et cetera? And it's a second home, if that matters.
If the home is a personal residence, there is no loss allowed for tax purposes on the sale of personal property. So as long as it was your first or second home or any other type of personal use asset, there is no loss.
So can't deduct anything there.
Nothing on sale of it. If you had a piece of investment property that you held or a rental property that you sold at a loss, those losses would be allowed. It's the personal side of it that takes you out of the loss possibility.
There you go. Thank you very much, Mike, for that question. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Well, like every year, we have changes to the tax code. What changes are we seeing this year?
Right now, And I'm assuming you're going from 2021 to 2022.
Correct.
Correct?
Yeah.
The thing that we don't know if there are any big changes as far as new things on the block. There hasn't been a tax bill other than the Inflation Reduction Act, which doesn't have a lot of things in it for the individual. But one of the warnings that I think people should think about is last year, 2021, was an unusual year. We had more child tax credit, more child care credit. We had stimulus payments. We had EIC rules that were over and above. For the most part, those extra things are gone, and we're going back to the way it was the prior year. So the child tax credit goes back to $2,000. It's available for the qualifying child who is under the age of 17. Last year we had it to the age of, included the age of 17. The child care credit is going back to the $3,000, $6,000 level instead of the $8,000, $16,000 for one or two children, and it's back to the 20% maximum rather than the 50% that it was this year.
Nah.
So what I would encourage people is to take a look at this year, 2022, and look at those numbers compared to what it looked like in 2020 and kind of make sure that you have enough withholding, because the gift that we had last year doesn't exist this year.
Betty sent an email, it kind of relates to this, wondering, will the 2022 required minimum distribution be waived due to retirement investment losses? When's the best time to take? And then she has some other questions. She wants to know, when's the best time to take RMDs? Or maybe December, in case any waivers implement?
I have the RMD issue is a good thing to talk about. In 2022, the required minimum distribution chart starts at age 72. And so it was 72 last year, but we have a new chart that we're using this year to decide, and it basically means people don't have to take out as much as they did in prior years and at an earlier age. I don't see, on the conditions right now, I don't see a waiver coming up. You can never be sure of what Congress will do, but I don't see a situation like COVID, hopefully this year, that means that you have to take it. You have to take your RMD by December 31st, unless it's the first year that you're required to take it, and then you have until April 1st to take that first year. However, if you wait till April 1st, then you're taking two for that year, because the April 1st, January to April, is just an extension of the prior year, and you still need to take the current year. So you would be adding twice to your income. So I strongly encourage people to take it by December 31st. The penalty for not taking it can be 50% of what you should have taken. And accumulations tax that could be assessed on it. So it's not worth playing around with it and forgetting to take it. The other thing is, when to take it depends on your personal ideas. Some people use it to pay a certain bill, so maybe they're going to take it out to pay the property taxes. Some people use it for charitable contributions, and there is a way to avoid paying taxes on it, because you can send the money directly from, in the case of an IRA, from the IRA to the charity, and that one gives you a charitable deduction kind of on the, without having to itemize if you would choose to do that. So lots of people do it for different things. Other people use it to live on. And if you use it to live on, you're going to want it probably early or at least evenly during the year. Hmm. So all of those factors go into it. There's no easy answer to that.
Gary in Eau Claire has a question. Gary, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
I got my Social Security statement this year, and when I was looking at it, what had happened in 2020 and 2021 was that my income doesn't match how much it says I made in both of them 2 years through Social Security. Does that make sense?
So what you need to do, I'm assuming from what you're is that you feel that you made more money than what is listed on your Social Security statement. Is that
correct? Because my W-2s, yes, my W-2s say I made one amount, and they're claiming like that I only made $1,000 for 1 year and less than that for a following year, for 21. Well, I took them to the Social Security office, but I'm wondering, how does that happen? I mean,
well, what could happen is that the Social Security Administration didn't get the W-2s from the employer, or something happened in the transition to the employer. So did the Social Security Administration take the information?
Yes, they took. In fact, I brought in everything from like 2007 because I was just really skeptical of what I saw. And then she went through all of them and then said she'd get back to me. Well, I haven't heard back from them. I'm sure that they're busy. I'm just wondering, do I have to watch this all the time? Is this a reoccurring thing?
It is a good thing to keep in mind to watch your Social Security statements, because there is a certain number of years, and I don't know exactly what it is, but there are a certain number of years that you have to notify them and say, hey, this doesn't look right. So they're not going to let you go back 20 years and contest a number 20 years ago. But it is a smart thing to keep an eye on the comparison of your W-2s to what the Social Security records each year. And at least every 3 years, you should be taking a look back at those 3 years.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking Your Taxes today with Mary Mellum, tax professional from Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. She and her husband David operate that. Jill Nadeau is our producer, by the way. Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your taxes with Mary Mellum, tax professional with Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining in. Again, questions, join in at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Aaron in Green Bay next. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, thanks, Larry. This should be an easy question for an expert who's coming from Ashwaubenon. If I sell my Packer tickets at a profit, am I liable in terms of taxes for that profit margin?
The answer to that is unequivocally yes.
Oh, there you go, Aaron.
But the answer is yes.
Okay. There you go, Aaron. Thank you. Jill in DeForest, your turn. Hi, Jill.
I owed taxes on my 2021 return, but the only reason I owed taxes was because I had to repay some premium tax credits for the ACA. I was wondering if that means that I still have to pay estimated tax payments for this year.
And you won't be doing that same thing?
What do you mean?
You're not expecting to owe the premium tax credit again.
Payment
in 2022.
Right.
If normally without that repayment, you don't need estimated tax payments. You're not going to need them this year, unless the situation comes up again. Are you still under the health insurance, the marketplace health insurance?
No, not now.
Okay. And so that situation's not going to manifest itself. If you would normally, without that credit, have enough withholding or estimated tax payments that you're currently paying, then you don't have to do it, and it's an unusual situation. Did you receive a letter from the IRS suggesting that you do estimated tax payments?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Sometimes when people have balance dues on their returns in a year, the IRS will send an informational letter that says you should do estimated tax payments. It is not a requirement, and sometimes people get it in unusual situations or one-time situations like yours. So if you're normally in a situation that you don't make estimated tax payments and nothing else has changed in that light, then you wouldn't be required to make them.
All right. There you go, Jill. Thank you so much. Kind of related, Lance emailed, this is his first year he needs to pay taxes on Social Security income. Those aren't paid quarterly, are they? Is it just treated like any other income on the tax form?
Your Social Security that you receive could be up to 85% of what you received, could be taxable. It depends on your income. So people vary. Some people receive Social Security and never pay any taxes on it. Some people pay on 50% of it. Some people pay on as much as 85% of the amount of Social Security is included in income. It goes in just like wages or retirement benefits. You can, through the Social Security system, ask them to take withholding out of it. And if you sign up to have withholding taken out of it, a little bit of will be taken out. Whatever percentage you set it up to be would be taken out automatically out of each check. If you're fearful of owing money at the end, that's always a good way to do it. Otherwise, over withhold on something else to make up for the Social Security.
That's what I have had to do, not for Social Security, but for other things. The way we were paid made it went from monthly to every 2 weeks. And so I think that somewhere along the line, I should have been taking more money out because I wasn't being taxed enough, even though I wasn't claiming any dependents. And I wound up with a little fine. It wasn't much, but a couple $100. But
and that's the thing. That's a really good question. Keeping with the extensions, I think it's good to talk about what you can expect if you file a return late or if you file even with an extension. By the way, the extension form is a 4868 form, not to be confused with the 2848 that I wanted to say before. If you do not do an extension and you have not timely filed your tax return and you have a refund coming, the IRS doesn't mind as much. The state of Wisconsin does have a penalty when you file late, even without an extension, even if they owe you money. So Wisconsin's a little different than federal. But if you owe the federal government money and you do not file an extension, you will have a failure to file penalty. And the failure to file penalty is 5% of the tax due for every month that you're late, up to a maximum of 25%. So that's the first penalty. And if you didn't file an extension and you owe them money, you're going to have a bigger bill than you thought. Now, on top of that, there is a failure to pay penalty. Even if you file an extension, if you owe them money, you will have a 0.5% per month. until that bill is paid. And it's a 0.5% per month, whether you pay it one day into the month or 29 days into the month. If you cross over that month, and it would start like April 15th to May 15th, any day that you cross in over that month, you're paying the 0.5% in that case. And then there is interest due. The federal government has changed, as many of us know, that the rates for borrowing have gone up, and they've gone up at the federal as well. From January to March, the interest rate that the federal government was charging was 3%. From April to June, it went up to 4%. In July through September, it's at 5%. So again, if you owe any money, it would be 5% based on the number of days in that period that you would owe. But it's not, if you're late filing your return and you owe the government money, expect to owe them more than what it says on the tax return.
Brenda in Heartland, your turn. Hi, Brenda.
Hi.
What can we do?
I was wondering about state taxes. My son, Wisconsin resident, he goes to school in Illinois. He had a part-time job in Illinois, and that employer withheld Illinois taxes. His income was quite low, so he would get a refund of all the taxes that were withheld. And since Wisconsin and Illinois are reciprocal, do we just file a Wisconsin return to get that money back, or do we have to file both Wisconsin and Illinois?
That's a very good question, Brenda. And you're right, Illinois and Wisconsin have reciprocity. So Illinois will not tax people on wages earned in Illinois while you're a Wisconsin resident. But the catch is that if they have withheld Illinois taxes, you still have to file an Illinois return, and it would show zero due, and that's how they would get their money back. Wisconsin doesn't hold the money, and so Wisconsin has no access to that. The wages earned in Illinois are taxable to Wisconsin. So the Wisconsin return would have that income on it, and depending on whether they owe taxes or not, that's a Wisconsin issue. But to get the money back, you have to file an Illinois return and ask for the money back. Or going forward, there is a form that can be submitted to the employer that says, I'm subject to reciprocity, don't withhold any Illinois tax.
Oh, okay. That's the way to do it if you can. Thanks very much for that question, Brenda. Appreciate it. Tom in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, hello. I received a letter this year earlier from the IRS saying that my 2018 tax was not filed. And I was shocked because the agency that was doing it, I had paid them. They assured me that they had filed it. And then I took it back and put it in there. And apparently I had one form that they did not have. They took an extension, but never notified me that there was one form missing, nor did they file any tax return. What do I do about that? Finally, I took it back. The agency did finally do that for the state and the federal, but they would not e-file it for me at all, nor would they give me a copy of my tax return. And I had to send the tax return in. Is there any place where you can complain about a tax agency that doesn't do its job?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by a tax agency. Whether you mean AARP.
Well, this was a regular tax service, you know, like.
Sure.
Like
I understand. You don't have to give us any names, but I understand what you mean. as a tax professional, it's important to follow up. And one of the things that a tax professional, if you do work, you are required to give a copy of the work, whether it is electronically or paper forms. If you have gone back, has your return been filed? Do you know?
I had to. They sent me one copy that I had to send in myself. They refused to do the e-file for it.
And so I had maybe there was a reason why they couldn't e-file, because it would be, once it's been filed, if it was rejected, they could turn around and refile it. But there might be some reason they couldn't have e-filed it. But did you send it to the government, maybe with the copy of the letter from them, and get it all filed?
Well, I sent it in whatever they sent me, and I filed it with the for both the state and the federal, and I got something back from the state, you know, as far as a little penalty, and then they told me to contest that, to file a complaint, because it wasn't my fault. They never informed me that.
Sure, I understand that. The first thing that I would recommend is that you go back to the organization that filed it and talk with them about any penalties that you owe, or any, you know, anything like that. First, discuss it with them. If you don't feel that you've been treated fairly from them, there is a form that you can report them to the IRS. It is a form 14-157. It is a complaint about a tax return preparer. But before you use that form, I strongly suggest that you go back to the company and say, I'm unhappy with your service. You didn't tell me this. How about a refund of my, you know, of my, what I paid you, or something, you know, some kind of situation to make you feel whole. I mean, most people in business, whether it's a tax business or any other kind of business, want to have satisfied customers. And so I would go back there first. And then if you don't feel like you've been treated fairly, you can file a complaint with the Office of Professional Responsibility. And this Form 14-157 asks for a lot of information, and it will tell you where to send this.
Good luck. Thank you so much, Tom. Appreciate your call. Mary Mellum, our guest, as we talk taxes here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your taxes today on the show with our guest, Mary Mellum of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. Always great to have her come by and talk with us. We've dealt with extension deadlines. There are plenty of deadlines that are coming up, and also been taking many questions, and I hope you'll join in with your tax question. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Chris emailed Mary. He inherited his dad's hunting cabin in Michigan, and he just sold it. Is there a way to invest the profit and not have to pay as much in taxes?
Yes, but I'm not sure it's a really good suggestion right now. Normally, the answer is no. Once it's sold, it first of all doesn't qualify for like-kind exchange treatment. But there is one program at the government that says if you take the money and invest it in a qualified opportunity fund, and it's a special fund that helps deprived places get back on track, like bad parts of the city, you know, that they're trying to bring back. And that's the only thing right now. And again, it started after the 2017 Tax Act, and it goes until 2026, I believe. And you're basically putting off reporting this income. Under the right circumstances, some of it will not be taxable, but it's still a risk. The capital gain rates right now are pretty low, that it's probably better to pay taxes on it and get it off the plate.
Get it off the plate. Yeah, there you go. And I suppose you could always donate a little extra from that, and at least you'd be helping somebody else, you know, some local organization or church or whatever. And
it is always good, and it helps on the tax return. Just another thing in that light. Earlier, you asked about what to look for 2022, and one of the things I mentioned is that we don't have a tax bill like we sometimes get by the end of the year. But there is, in the Inflation Reduction Act that was just signed recently, there is a little bit of help for consumers, and I think it's important to mention this. Over the years, we've had deductions for putting in energy-efficient items like windows and doors and insulation and furnaces. For a lot of people, that wasn't, it expired at the end of 21, and if you had taken advantage of it in the past, there probably wasn't a lot for you to take advantage of. In the Inflation Reduction Act, there is a revival of the energy credits. So if you are doing anything in 2022, be sure you keep your receipts and ask, and there's probably not a lot of information out right now because that bill is relatively new. But if you are going to do that, keep the receipts so that when you go to do the tax returns, if it is something that qualifies, you will have what's necessary for to take advantage of it.
Bill in Milwaukee has a question, I believe. Let's go there. Hi, Bill.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I started a new job this year after leaving my old job of about 10 years in Illinois. And when I completed the I-9 the last time I started a new job, I entered a 1 for extra withholding. And I noticed on this, when I completed my latest I-9, they asked for a specific amount. So I wonder how much was being withheld extra when I entered the 1 in the box on my previous I-9 versus now.
Okay, first of all, I'm going to clarify something you're saying. I think you're talking about a W-4 for withholding.
W-4, that's it. Yeah,
you're the right. I-9 is to say whether you're a resident or an alien or, you know, things like that. It's to determine citizenship, all of that kind of thing. So it's the W-4. And one of the things, if you were at your employer quite a while before, you may not have seen the new W-4 that's been out for the last couple of years. And it is based on a different premise than the old one was. The old one, I would have said, I'm single, I'm married, I want 1 exemption, 0 exemptions, whatever. And that's where that 1 comes into play. If you fill out your W-4 currently, are you married?
Yes.
Does your wife work?
No.
Okay. With a W-4, the new W-4 theoretically is supposed to withhold the proper amount of taxes without taking any extra out to cover the wages that you have. So if you took your W-4, and checked your filing status, and that's what one of the first questions is, and signed the W-4 and handed it in, they would look at the chart and pick the withholding that would leave you at no refund, no balance due. It also says that you don't have any other income. So there's two ways to work with that. One of them says, if I have multiple jobs or my wife works, there's a box to check that will give you extra withholding taken out, just as, you know, according to the chart. But if your wife is not working and you just check married filing joint, if you have other income like investments or something like that, at the bottom of the form, the last line, it says, how much extra would you like to take out each year or each pay period? And that would be a good place to put anything extra that, you know, if you were short when you file your tax return, if you think you're going to owe $1,000 and you get paid each week, you could take that $1,000 divided by 52 and put a number into that. But that's the best way to work with it. There's a few other lines that say, you know, I can add this line in and say I have this much expenses, this much deductions, and they will adjust your income to reflect that. It's usually a little bit more difficult to make that guesstimate that way than it is just to say withhold an extra $50 a pay period or something like that.
Yep. Bill, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Danny in Madison emailed that she stands to benefit from Joe Biden's recent student loan forgiveness program, but she's concerned about how this will affect her Wisconsin state income taxes. From what little she can find out, it looks like federally it's not taxable income, but in the state of Wisconsin at this time, it is considered taxable income, according to what she could see anyway. Could you advise?
First of all, this is a new thing, and I wouldn't spend the money before I got it. It seems to be, if you look at the news, there's a question of whether the president has the right to exclude the payments, you know. And so if it does, or if it takes an act of Congress and Congress goes along with it, they probably will put a provision in that says it's not taxable to federal. And I say, you know, don't spend the money before you know for sure that this is going to work out. On the top, basically, according to tax law, if you have any debt that's canceled, that debt is taxable income. There is a code section that says if I'm bankrupt, insolvent, qualified farm debt, qualified real property business indebtedness, or a home debt, that there's an exclusion for it under circumstances. So Congress or someone in the government, somehow legally, they have to say that this is not taxable income to Wisconsin, to federal. If that is done, then Wisconsin takes a look at it and says, do we want to go along with federal or don't we? If they don't go along with federal, if it comes out that way, then it will be taxable just as if you had gotten a $10,000 bonus. So whatever your tax rate that you're in, and Wisconsin is kind of somewhere in the 4-7%, depending on where you are, that you can figure that times 10,000 is what the additional tax that you're going to have to pay. And again, this has happened too quickly for federal to make rules or for state to come out with anything, you know, to announce it yet. It'll be the end of the year before we know really what's going on.
I would think, you know, let's say you owed $10,000 that's now going to be forgiven. They're not going to send you a check for $10,000. They're just going to say, well, you don't have to pay the $10,000. And you're saying that then you're going to be taxed on that.
The The federal law says that if you have received debt forgiveness, debt cancellation, it's a taxable event. Federal has to say something special to say this taxable event in this situation is not taxable. So just based on the code, the $10,000 would be taxable income. To get it to be not taxable, something else has to happen.
Okay. Mary Mellum will be with us right up until 12:30 today to answer your tax questions. And I hope you'll stay with us, and I hope you'll join in with your questions. The number is 1-800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. We need to take a quick look at the news, and we'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we will be back with Mary. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're taking a look at your income taxes on the show today. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Mary Mellum of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals is back. She and her husband David have been in the tax business for more than 30 years. They serve individuals. They help train other tax professionals. They teach tax seminars around the country. So she knows a lot, and I hope you'll join in with your questions. With a couple open lines, get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234, or you could send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And Mary, we have Rebecca from Watertown online with a question, so let's go there. Rebecca, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I want to say that I'll be 72 by the end of this year. I have a deferred comp account from work, and I have an IRA account at a bank. And so I was wondering if I could use my IRA and convert that to a Roth and pay tax on that, if that could go toward my required minimum distribution that will be due.
I do not believe that you're able to do, you can certainly convert it and you'll be paying taxes on it. I don't believe that that is going to satisfy your RMD, because in doing so, RMDs, the Roth accounts do not have RMD requirements. So I believe you have to take the RMD out of the IRA, and then if you don't want to ever have to do that again, then do the conversion.
Ah, okay.
It's basically going to be the same amount. You're going to take out your conversion, pay taxes on that, and the balance in the account could be taken out and or could be moved to a Roth, and you'll be paying taxes together on the same amount. But next year, you won't have the RMD requirement from the Roth account.
And Rebecca, if Rebecca wanted to say, maybe she pays, she donates to some place, isn't there a way to just eliminate the need for paying taxes at all on that amount, that required amount?
There is the ability to donate money to a charity directly with your RMD, and it's called a qualified charitable distribution. It can only come out of the IRA, and it has to go directly to charity, and you can do up to $100,000 in a year to one charity or multiple charities. But that would be one way not to pay taxes on it.
Rebecca, thank you very much for calling. Let's go to Fred in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Fred.
Hi, guys. I have a brother-in-law that lives in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and his wife has Alzheimer's disease, and she's participating in a trial, clinical trial, in Canton, Ohio, which is about 6.5 hours away. She can't travel by car with her condition the way it is, so they have to have a charter flight, which is $3,200 a crack. She does have her doctor will sign a form saying that it's necessary. I was wondering, do you think that that is a qualified medical expense, or because it's a clinical trial, it wouldn't qualify? That's my question.
I, on the surface of it, travel for medical purposes is a deductible expense. There is an amount that, for mileage, that you're limited to. But if flying is, if it's necessary to do that, I certainly would try it as a charitable deduction. That certainly doesn't mean the IRS couldn't question it, but I would think if that's the necessary way to go to it, I don't think the fact that it's a clinical trial is going to keep it. It is the expenses for help, hopefully the mitigation of the disease.
So it would count as a medical expense then?
I would say it would be at worst a gray area, and I would certainly be willing to take that expense.
Yeah, and especially with a doctor signing off on it as necessary, you would think that would add a lot of credence to it.
Yes. I think there's a very good chance, because travel for medical is allowed, and I don't see a reason that the clinical trial wouldn't be considered medical.
Yep.
A medical expense.
There you go, Fred. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Mike in Hartford, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I love your show. My wife's uncle recently passed, and his estate, a lot of it was, stocks and stuff. It was dispersed to four people via cash, and I'm wondering how much is there tax that I'm going to have to pay for that as far as income, or, you know, and what could that possibly percentage-wise be?
Okay. I'm glad you asked the estate question. I was hoping that someone would do that, because I think it's a good thing to talk about. Generally, inheritance is not taxable. And that applies except when you inherit something like a retirement account that the decedent hadn't paid taxes on. You said it was stock, and the people, if they had been distributed the stock itself, there would have been no tax at all. If they had to sell the stock to disperse the cash, there is potential for gain on the sale of the stock. However, if at the time the person dies, the stock is valued at whatever it was worth at the date of death, and generally the difference between what it was worth at death and what it sold in a relatively short time is going to produce little or no gain. So if this was done fairly quickly and there weren't any big market surges or things like that, you're probably not going to have much tax to pay at all. There is a K-1 that your wife should receive, and at the end of the year or the end of the time, not to exceed a year, that gain that they may have paid taxes on, or loss, if it's the final year, would get passed out to the beneficiaries. So that it would only be the earnings on the money, generally, that you have to worry about paying taxes on. And it may be offset by expenses. So I wouldn't get too concerned about it.
There you go, Mike. Appreciate your call. Jennifer in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Jennifer.
Hello, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm wondering, my daughter received a uniform gift to minor account from a grandparent, and she just turned 18, and so she's taking possession of that account. I'm wondering if there's anything, any way that she can invest that so that she can minimize the tax liability. And I guess I'm just wondering just sort of generally what her tax liability is now that she's taken control of the account when she turned 18.
Okay. It's a good question to ask, but there is something that you're missing in the picture. The uniform gift to minor account, when it's set up in the name of the minor and the social security number of the minor. So as this account was earning income over the years, she was should have been including that income on her tax return. What probably was the case is that the income was not large enough to have made any impact or forced her to file differently than she did. The fact that she turned 18 just means that she has the ability to get that money out. Prior to that, the custodian was the one who would control whether the money could come out or not to her. It's hers, but somebody else was in charge. So tax consequences have not changed from its inception to now under uniform gift to minors account. As far as moving it somewhere else, since it's her account, she certainly can do whatever she wants with it. And usually there's paperwork that it takes a little bit to get the holder of the account to recognize her as being not a minor. So you may have to send in birth certificates or things like that. It's just sometimes the accounts just continue there. But certainly she can move that money to other types of investments that are tax-exempt investments or something like that. And talking to a financial planner would be a good idea.
Yep. For her. I think you're exactly right on that, Mary. Jennifer, good luck with that. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Ron in Whitefish Bay. Hi, Ron.
Hi. I would like to know if there is an absolutely 100% free federal tax form online for either the federal government or the state of Wisconsin. Anything that's absolutely free. I'm tired of paying TurboTax and H&R Block and everything else for one of the simplest forms ever. So that's what I'm wondering.
Keep in mind, Ron, that you're talking to a tax professional and that's how we make our living. So I just want to put that out there. There are, I believe, Wisconsin, and I have to say that I have to plead somewhat ignorance in here because I don't look around for free tax software. The federal government had a program with different software vendors that they provided free depending on certain conditions. So I know TurboTax and I think H&R Block were part of that program at one time. I think they since have gone out of it. You might go to irs.gov and type in free file, the term free file, and find out what comes up. I believe the state of Wisconsin has a program through the Wisconsin Department of Revenue that you can enter your Wisconsin information and file through them.
There you go. Ron, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Judy called to say she saved money on her taxes because of your help on this show, Mary, and she became a WPR sustainer because of it.
Well, I think that's wonderful.
I think you've saved a lot of people a lot of money if you figure it out over all the times that you've been on the air with me. I don't think she's the only one for sure. You can join in too, by the way. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Or you could email us. The email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Karen in Watertown, we'll go to you now. Hi, Karen.
1234. Or you can email us the email address, ideas@WPR.org.
Karen, are you there?
I am. I would like to know when I take my required minimum distribution, how it is determined. I know it's a percent, but is there a table that goes on into the future, or is it determined prior?
It's a good question, Karen, and there is an answer. The answer says that you take the balance in the account at the end of the prior year that you're taking the distribution for, i.e., the balance at the end of 2021 divided by the factor based on your age in 2022, by the end of 2022. So if this would be your first year to qualify to be required to take it out, for instance, age 72, the factor for age 72 is 27.4. So the balance at the end of the year prior divided by 27.4 is what you're required to take out at age 72. Those factors change each year. The IRS has a uniform table that is brand new this year because of the 72 age change. And each year that factor changes. It goes down a little bit. And if you live to be 120, you divide your account by two.
There you go. Probably not a lot of people in that age range there.
I don't think so. I think there's a lot. But the IRS wants to make sure that you're paying taxes on the money that you've been able to accumulate.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that that's not going to change. So it goes, the number goes down as you get older.
Correct.
So correct. That means that you're more of what's left is going out.
Yes, but all of that depends on how well your investments do. So sometimes you have to take out more in some years and some years not. Just depends on how it ends up at the end of the year. Just to give you an idea, from age 72, which is 27.4, to age 73, it drops to 26.5, so 0.9, not even one whole number decrease.
Okay, got it. Marge in Madison, we go to you now. Hi, Marge.
Hi. I have a question about investment clubs. I belong to two investment clubs. I filed the taxes for them for years, and the state is now requiring that you file electronically. But the state does not have a free site for filing electronically, and they allow you to do a waiver, but I'm afraid they're going to do away with that. I would need to go through an agency, H&R Block, somebody, I think, that would file it for us, or else buy the program every year to file for a partnership.
And that's exactly what I was going to ask you. I'm assuming that you are filing an investment club as a partnership.
Correct.
And the IRS and the state of Wisconsin, I don't believe you'll find a free file program for either one of those.
That's correct. But, I mean, when you have, I don't know how I would be charged for that. I don't know what the program would cost. The only thing we file is dividends and interest in any capital gains or losses. Those are the only things that go on the account. So to buy a file for a partnership, I think, would be expensive.
Well, it depends. And like I say, we get our software as a whole package, and it doesn't compare anything to what you might be able to get. Some software companies will allow you to buy on a return basis. Per return. So I don't know if that might be something that would help you. but you are filing a Form 1065, and while it might seem easy with what you have, there can be a lot of intricacies with investments. You've got your dividends, you've got your sale, so you've got the dividend forms, the qualified dividends, you've got the Schedule D, the 8949, to show the sale of those items. So it all depends on, you know, how much is involved in it.
So how would it, you, how would you charge for an investment club to file through you? By the page?
We charge what we would normally charge for a partnership return. And tax professionals have a wide variety of charges for it. So if you know somebody personally that's in the tax business, you might be able to get an answer for that, or maybe call one of the national chains and ask for an estimate.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a way to do it. Thank you very much for calling, Marge. Appreciate it. We've had a number of listeners call to suggest various free tax filing sites. One was taxslayer.com. AARP was another, and they somebody else recommended public libraries. So those are some those are I guess some possibilities, Mary, for people who have a pretty straightforward, you need a pretty straightforward form if you're going to do that. The free ones, I think, are pretty, you wouldn't have a want to have a complicated tax situation in order to do that.
I agree with you there. I do believe places like AARP and some of the government programs where you can go to that place and they'll file for you. Those do have some requirements as far as how involved the return can be that they do.
Yeah.
I just have my computer in front of me, and at irs.gov, if you type in the word free file, there is information that talks that you can see through IRS website. There's one of them that says free file software, most commonly filed federal forms available. Another one says free file, do your own taxes for free.
They're out there.
You just have to go out and look. And again, if you're going to get what you pay for.
there you go.
If you're knowledgeable and it works, great. If you have things that are involved and don't know the answers to it, you may find yourself with IRS letters. So.
Yeah, there you go. Mary, on that note, we're out of time. Thank you so much. We'll look forward to another visit from you. Very much appreciated. Mary Mellum of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals, our guest. Thanks for listening. I'm Larry Mehler for the Ideas Network.